Welcome back to the Someone to Tell To podcast. We are so grateful to have you with us here today for this conversation with leadership and sales expert Todd Cohen. We really enjoyed this conversation. This is the second time we've had the chance of being in a call with Todd, and he just has so much wisdom around this topic that a lot of us have shied away from. It's not something that is natural to a lot of us, is talking about sales and looking at our lives as an opportunity to kind of sell who we are as people and not just like a product. And I know he's really shifted my way of thinking around this. And I would imagine in this conversation, you're going to learn a lot of helpful and practical wisdom and values about, you know, just being who you are and letting yourself do the talking.
Todd has the ability to speak to people and change the whole definition of what sales are and what they mean and how that we are always selling and not in some kind of pushy, sleazy way, which is sometimes the stereotype, but it's our demeanor, our genuineness, our lack thereof, our passion he talks about. And those are the things that help sell people on something that's important to us. And we hope that you'll find this conversation to be illuminating and just enjoyable in every way. So let's introduce you to him. An engaging international keynote speaker and best-selling author, Todd Cohen is the leading voice on sales culture. Todd's messages focus on the mindset and behavior of selling and successfully and humorously teaching the non-sales professional how everything they do impacts the decision-making process. Todd demonstrates how every conversation is a selling moment and how everyone can contribute to the growth and profitability of an organization. He's the author of 3 books on sales culture, Everyone's in Sales, Stop Apologizing and Start Selling, and Mastering the Sales Mindset. And he is also the host of the Sales Culture Toddcast.
Well, Todd, what a pleasure it is to welcome you to the Someone to Tell To podcast today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks. Well, we just wanted to begin today the same way that we do with every conversation with every guest that we have on the program. And it's just a simple question, but it's always oftentimes a profound answer is just tell us about yourself. But I'm going to add also a little caveat. We just love being in the same space as you because you're super funny and you're fun to be around. And so I would just like to add like any humorous things that you want to add to that, please feel free to kind of help our audience get to know you a little bit better.
Well, my wife is a litigator. I love her dearly, but I wake up every morning and I say good morning and she says, prove it. Bum, bum, bum. There's a joke for you. So I did stand-up comedy in my 20s in the dark ages before they had electricity. But I'm happy to be here, gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity just to spend a little time talking about what my passion is, and which is the same as what I do, which is teaching everybody how we all sell, whether we realize it or not. So my mantra is, as a keynote speaker in the workshops, and I do some coaching, it's all about everyone's in sales and about how we all have, you know, we all have a salesperson's DNA in us. It's whether we choose to acknowledge it and use it for the forces of good, or we succumb to the negative stereotype of selling and risk failing and not getting what we want, need, and deserve because of that negative stereotype, that boogeyman in our heads that says selling is bad. And I know we'll get into more of that. So that's what I do. I'm on a global mission to demystify and take all the negativity out of the concept of selling.
Well, then let's continue with that thought. talk to our listeners and viewers. Why does sales have such a negative connotation for so many people? Why does it have this, you know, many people look at it as something that's maybe distasteful or unpleasant. So like to talk about that because we know that you like to demystify that and change people's perspectives and attitudes. So go ahead.
No, it's a great question. And I think that's really the cornerstone for everything, right? So people hate the idea of selling and they certainly don't like salespeople because of the stereotype that persists, right? I mean, one of the questions I always ask in my keynotes and my workshops is, all right, when you hear the word sales, what do you think of? And you know, all the predictable answers, you know, used car salesperson, you know, somebody trying to sell me something on the phone, a telemarketer. So selling in and of itself has a negative stereotype because it's the idea that people are being pushed into something they don't want, right? And, or they're being, and so, you know, as one person said to me recently, I just felt bullied until I said yes. Well, you see, that's a bad salesperson. That's different than the fact that we're all in sales. And so one of the reasons, probably the biggest reason that negative stereotype exists is because we've all had bad experiences as consumers, myself included, right? I mean, I've encountered some of the worst salespeople and sales tactics and sales things in my life that literally I walked away going, I can't believe that I just went through that. And I've experienced some of the most amazing selling experiences that weren't selling in the conventional sense. These people were building a relationship with me. And that's the key, that's the difference, right? You know, one of the things I love to say is stop selling and start connecting or start building a relationship and the sale will come. So that negative stereotype is all about the experiences we've had feeling like we're being pushed into something or somebody is dealing with us in not a way that is necessarily, you know, full of integrity or credibility. And there's a lot of very, very great professional salespeople out there. And so I want to acknowledge them because I know many and they're phenomenal human beings. And we're all in sales because we all have to sell ourselves every day. The other reason we have such a negative stereotype is there have been some great movies over the years that just glorify the worst side of selling. You know, Tin Men, one of my all-time favorite movies from 1989, Danny DeVito and Barbara Hershey. And
I wasn't born yet, Todd.
Oh,
just
okay,
kidding.
Yes, he was.
Well, I'm going to have to call your HR officer, which I think is you. So, you know, The Boiler Room and Glengarry Glen Ross. I mean, these movies that we've all seen, right? Just The Wolf of Wall Street, which is, you know, one of the more recent ones. Mm-hmm. You know, people see those movies and they go, see, that's why I hate salespeople. What we hate is being pushed into something. What we hate is feeling like we're being sold something we don't want. That's different than sales being a bad thing. And I could go on this topic for literally days.
Yeah, well, you gave us such a good example. I mean, everybody has at least seen or heard of the most recent movie that you referenced, like Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I wanted to kind of just ask more of like a broad question just about what you've seen shift since COVID, like some of the shifts you've seen in business in general.
Yeah, not for the good. I'll just say that. I am an old school relationship driven human being. And I think we all are to an extent. I think that what's happened in COVID, especially with work from home, is that people have abdicated the opportunity to build relationships. I think people mistakenly believe that relationships can be built as well online or through LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I'm not picking on LinkedIn. And I'm not a shill for them either. Or I can build more relationships over Zoom than I can in person. That is a profound fallacy. Nothing builds a relationship better than being in a room with somebody, experiencing somebody's presence, their aura, how they show up. And COVID and the subsequent work environment, the work from home and hybrid work, has really removed the opportunity for all of that to happen. I also think we've lost the art of conversation. I think we've lost the ability to sit down and do what selling actually is, which is nothing more than doing what we're doing right here, having a conversation, right? We're getting to know each other. We're building a relationship. That's what sales is. It's an opportunity to influence. And, you know, work from home, which you can clearly see I am not a fan of, you know, has become synonymous with, well, I'm more productive. I don't necessarily believe that. I think you might get more done, but I think we've lost the opportunity to build better, deeper, richer relationships. And given what you all do and your amazing, you know, operation, it's also hurt our ability to listen. I don't think we listen anywhere near as well as we did pre-COVID. I see it all the time. People are just impatient and our attention spans are shorter. And I just don't think that anything good has come out of it relative to how we build ourselves up as people. There's a lot there. I just gave you a lot to unpack.
Yeah. Where to start with that?
Yeah.
What do you see is the antidote to that? How can that be changed? If you're seeing, feeling, perceiving that we're not listening as well to one another, we're not connecting as well, how can we change that in light of the changes that have occurred, you know, in our culture, in society,
yeah,
you know, all around, in many cases, all around the world?
People have to learn to be brave. They have to say, you know what, I'm not going to default to, I can talk to this person over Zoom. I'm going to be brave and say, you know what, let's meet for a cup of coffee. We've got to go back to doing what was the benchmark. And to do that takes bravery, it takes courage, and candidly, it takes a commitment to want to build a better relationship. It takes not being lazy about our relationships and assuming that distance makes them as good. I mean, there are certain things that we can do. Sure, I can do more meetings. I can do this podcast with you, although I would obviously rather be in a studio. It wasn't possible today, right? So the anecdote for that is, let me say it differently. Until there is a general understanding that work from, and I use work from home. Yes, I'm picking on it, but until business leadership says our culture is at risk by not having people building relationships, until that happens, which I don't see that happening on a broad scale right now, people at an individual level, the anecdote, if you will, the antidote, is going to be, I'm going to make the decision on my own to go and connect with somebody in a way that's not necessarily easy. It's about bravery and it's about courage. And frankly, it's about managing your time better as well. And that's a very short answer to what I think is a much deeper and more systemic issue that is impacting so many layers of our society today. Walk around the city. I mean, they're vacant, and that's not good for anybody.
Yeah, I'd like to do a little bit of a deeper dive around relationships. And here at Someone to Tell To, we teach that the first step to listening compassionately and intentionally is to start with the belief that everyone matters, everyone has a story to tell, and often that they don't have someone to tell it to. And you say that in sales culture, the entire organization understands that each individual impacts the customer. And so just what are some ways we've witnessed positive change happening when people know they're valued and valuable to an organization?
Yeah, that's another great question. So let me go back to what one of my bedrock beliefs are, which really goes to the question that was just asked, which is, when people see how what they do has an ultimate impact on a customer's success or a colleague's success, that's a behavioral change, right? That they do it again and again and again. That's sort of the opposite of being a cog in the wheel. And so if we take that basic belief, and you either believe that or you don't, right? I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, I'm okay with not mattering, or I'm okay with being overhead. I don't think people actually consciously think that. I think everybody wants to feel like what they do has value. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once we get people believing that, then I think we become better listeners, right? I think, you know, we become people who are more intentionally engaged with our colleagues, with the people around us, with the people who are helping the customers. I mean, look, every company has something to sell. If you say we're in a business, but we're not selling, you're wrong. I mean, everybody's selling something. I mean, you know, and to deny that is a problem. And so, you know, to the question earlier, this has all been made more difficult by COVID, right? By hybrid, by work from home, by not being together. This intentional motion of helping people see that what they do has an enormous impact. And that's a critical component. And how do you do that? Well, you start doing that by getting to know people and understanding not what their title is, but what they actually do, right? And how do you do that? You have to be a good listener. you can't be, you can't come into a conversation with bias or judgment or something that says, well, you're the so-and-so title, therefore I've already made a decision on you. So, and this is so critical. And you know, I think this is one of the reasons I am so enamored of what you're all doing. It's so simple and so basic. And it's almost like a return to where we need to be, which is we've turned into lousy listeners. I mean,
yeah. I think that point about judgment is an important one. And I want to share an example. Just it literally happened to Michael and I yesterday. So we spoke at a leadership program here locally that we're closely affiliated to in Central Pennsylvania. And at the end of our presentation, they did a practice among the class where they had every classmate stand up and share something personal about their lives that would help everyone in the class know who they are more fully. And there were multiple examples where someone stood up, and I'll just give two examples that came to mind. One woman stood up and she said with tears in her eyes, "I've been a single mom and I was homeless with four kids 8 years ago, eating out of a dumpster." If you had looked at that woman in the crowd, you would have had no idea that was a part of her story. The next gentleman stood up and he's admittedly so after the presentation, because he came up to me because he knew I was a runner. And he said, admittedly so, I'm not in as good of a shape as I was just a few years ago. But he stood up and talked about how he's run the Boston Marathon 3 times. And he has run a faster time than me. And he's a better runner than me. And I was just like super impressed by this. And if anybody would have looked at him, you would easily have made assumptions. And so we talk all the time just about how do you not make assumptions? Because as the statement goes, what happens when we make assumptions? You make, out of you and I. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Look, we all come into, every time we meet somebody, before they ever say a word, we already make a buying decision on them. It's how they show up. It's presence. And, I teach that presence is an element of sales, of how we all sell ourselves. So, because we come into every situation, whether we want to admit it or not, and I know you gentlemen understand this and get this, we come in with bias. We just do. Okay. I mean, everybody's got biases, conscious and subconscious. And that's a whole nother field of stuff that I can only speak to, but if you're human, you have biases. And I think that also impacts how we listen. Right? I mean, you meet somebody for the first time who represents a bias that you have a negative, belief on, you're already shut down. You can't be present. You've already shut down. That person doesn't have a chance of selling themselves to you. And it's sad. And I think, Michael, to your question earlier, that's another bad side of COVID, right? I mean, the bias is we don't get a chance to let people see the real us. So, Tom, to your point about vulnerability, talk about a selling skill. Vulnerability is top of the list, right? I mean, you show who you are, you show that you're real, that you show that you're approachable, people will buy from you because they're not buying from you, they're buying you. They're buying you. They're willing to build a relationship with you, which is effectively selling yourself. That's what I mean when I say everyone's in sales. Well, I should say that's only one part of it. So vulnerability is huge. COVID, work from home, lack of relationships, lack of connection. There's no way it can't affect our ability to be better at this. There's just no way.
Do you have any thoughts or opinions on why do you think we, throughout COVID, so many people so quickly slid into a place of disconnection with people?
And it's easy.
Okay.
It's easy.
Say more about that.
I mean, I don't think it takes, you said, do I have an opinion? I think by now you probably figured out that there's much I don't have. There's a point of there's a good point about being my age. I don't care anymore. I'm just going to put it out there and agree or disagree. I'm cool with that. But look, all kidding aside, it's easy. I think that the whole concept of being working from home, you know, so many people also allowed themselves to do more things. You know, Peloton became sort of a, you know, everybody bought, was buying Pelotons, right? And spending time doing that. I think when we, I think there were a lot of things that took our attention off the core element of being a human, which is building better relationships and listening and being vulnerable. And it was easy. And I don't think it's any more complicated than that. And I think the problem is when you normalize that kind of easy, then now it's become normal. Before COVID, that wasn't normal, right? I mean, wow, working from home or, you know, taking some time to go to the gym during the day or whatever it might be. But over time, anything that's anything that's not considered normal, if you do it enough, it becomes normalized, right? And it becomes easy. And I think that's the biggest challenge facing us. That's why I was saying a moment ago, we have to be brave and take the higher road. We have to get out of our shell and go back to that baseline that was at one time the minimum that we were expected to do. I've learned people take the easy road.
How can we encourage or help people to take that harder road, to be courageous, to want to reach out and want to know people, want to connect with people, want to be known by people? Because I don't know, totally agree. We all want to be known in many ways. We want to be loved ultimately. But there are a lot of people who really resist. Even yesterday in the leadership, you know, conference that we were speaking to, when there were some people who admitted, because we broke them up into groups of three to talk and to listen, to practice listening to one another, and we did this three different times with them, and in between those times we debriefed with them, and there were some people who said it was hard for them to. We gave them 10 minutes to talk about themselves, to share something with the other two people in their group, and then we rotated them. But there were those who really struggled at first to do that. So how can we help people to be more courageous and be more vulnerable and open and realize that it is beneficial? It is beneficial to our relationships.
So it's a great question. And I think that, sorry, my wife was saying goodbye to me. So I had to, like, you know, say goodbye to my wife. So that's why I was going like that. Anyhow. So, and by the way, that's being vulnerable, right? That's life. I mean, you know,
sure. That's great.
And therein lies the point, but you know, she wanted to have an extensive conversation. Like, can't do it right now. But I think what you asked was, there was two parts to your question, I think, Michael. I think you asked what's in it for them, right, to be brave. And I think you asked, you know, why is it difficult for people to take that step as it relates to talking about themselves? I want to make sure I heard the question correctly.
That's great. That works.
Yeah. So I think it's hard for people to take that step because vulnerability is scary, right? And I don't know that that's a COVID thing. I think people, generally speaking, there's always going to be people who simply don't like to talk about themselves. They think it feels salesy or uncomfortable, or there's that, you know, there's that old, not conventional, outdated wisdom that, you know, vulnerability is weakness and it's a bad thing, right? And I couldn't disagree with that more. In fact, you know, the opposite is true. People learn from other people's vulnerabilities, right? I mean, it's just that simple. You show me you're vulnerable, I feel a little more comfortable sharing something about me. People still have a hard time doing it. End of story. There are just going to be people who don't like to talk about themselves because they don't know how. It's never been encouraged. It's their upbringing. There's a million reasons, right? And the first part of your question, you know, what's in it for them to be brave, to take that big step? Well, what's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? A better relationship, career advancement, professional advancement. How about this? The person who's brave. And in my workshops, I always say, write this down. So to the audience, I'm going to say, write this down. To the person who's brave, you now become memorable. And you know why it's good to be memorable? Because you get the first call for whatever that person ultimately needs, right? That's the bottom line. I could talk to 10 people a day on Zoom, and I guarantee you the minute that camera goes off, I've already forgotten. I mean, because I'm on to the next thing. But the person I meet in face-to-face, who I can feel them and experience them and get a sense of who they are, and when I need what they're selling, yes, we're all in sales, guess who's getting my call? That person, not one of the nameless gazillion Zoom calls I've done in between my exercise routine and answering the door for Amazon and everything else.
Say goodbye to your wife.
Yes, think about, well, that's, listen, you know, I mean, that's always mandatory in my household, but no. But as I said, she's a lawyer. If I don't say goodbye, there might be lawsuit papers by the end of the day. But apologies to all lawyers out there in the world. Anyhow, look, and that's the answer. What's in it for them? Well, what's in it for you is being memorable. And I got news for you. Being memorable equals profitability, equals advancement. Because who are you going to remember? You're going to remember the person you met in person. End of story. Not debating.
That's such a good point. We've used this quote, and I used it actually yesterday to begin a lot of presentations, and it comes from Maya Angelou, the poet. And she was famous having said, people may forget who you are.
They'll forget what you said. They'll forget what you said,
but they'll never forget, you know,
how you made them feel.
Yeah. So how do you see that playing out?
I literally use that quote in my sales culture workshops. You'll see that when I'm with you all next month.
Okay.
Because and I use that quote. I'm getting a tingle literally as I heard you say that, because that you're locking on to exactly the point that I'm trying to make. If I said to you that Maya Angelou had the greatest definition of sales ever, nobody would believe me. And then I put that quote up. You know what sales is? It's about how you make people feel. When they're driving away, when they're leaving your workshop, when they're leaving an interaction with you, somebody is thinking, would I call Tom again? How did I feel about that conversation with Michael? You know what? That's sales. Maya Angelou said it better than anybody could. It's not about facts and figures. It's not about forcing you into something you don't want to do or do. It's about how do you feel when the conversation is over, when you both get into your car and drive away. That's what matters.
Okay, I guess we're done.
Yeah, I mean, you summed end of story. There's you've perfectly summed all that up. We love that quote and use it a lot as well, because it is about how we make people feel, help people to feel. And one of the compliments that we get often, and it really does feel good to us, is that we exude a genuineness, when we're listening, that we're genuinely interested in the person, and when we're speaking, we are genuinely saying things that people see we really mean, and that you know, that's one of the best compliments we can receive. That they think we're genuine.
It comes through.
So, you know, how you make them feel. And, you know, we've both worked with other people who haven't always been so genuine. And people see right through that. Absolutely see right through it. And can be very quick to dismiss those people who they do not perceive as genuine. And because of that, do not make them or help them to feel good or better or trusting.
That's exactly right.
Are that they even want to begin to be vulnerable with those people because they can't trust. Right. They can't trust what the response may be.
You know, it's interesting. I've heard people, and I couldn't have. That's exactly right. I mean, and even from our first conversation when we first met, and you know, Sarah Kennedy brought us all together. You know, look, people show up without saying a word, right? And they show up while they're talking, but, you know, and that's what people lock onto, and that's why people buy. And, you know, it just brings me back to the point about, and, you know, Tom, you brought this up much earlier in our conversation. It just brings me to the point about vulnerability. It is everything. I mean, I have a list of 21 human behaviors, which are synonyms for selling, because I want to show people that we're all doing sales behaviors every day. If you choose to call it sales stereotype, then you're going to shortchange yourself. So on that list of 21 human behaviors, and you know, I'll share those with you when we meet, one of them is vulnerability. One of them is presence. One of them is, you know, confidence. I mean, one of them is passion. If you're passionate, you're in sales because you're selling what you believe. You're selling yourself. So selling is about mindset and behavior, not being a bad salesperson with bad sales training. That's a different subset, right? And I don't like that either. And I teach this. So it just comes down to acknowledgement that, you know what? If I can build a good relationship, I can sell, period. And you build better relationships in person than you do virtually.
Can we do a little bit more around vulnerability for a sec? I just would like to know what revelations or changes you've seen in others when they have learned or embraced this concept.
My concept?
Just vulnerability in general.
Well, they tell me I'm absolutely brilliant and that I'm incredibly handsome. And now they're lying on both counts. No, I.
That's for those who are tuning in audio, but maybe not.
Yeah, right. No, I would say when people, if I understood your question, how people have changed when they see that vulnerability is a good thing, is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
They build better relationships. They notice that people are more likely to spend time with them, listen to them, connect with them. There's a change in your body, you know, language. I mean, everything just changes. When you find that connection point where you can be vulnerable with somebody and somebody can identify with that, everything changes. Look, I share a story in my keynotes about a cancer diagnosis that I had, you know, not 8 years ago. And, you know, I had prostate cancer and I was pretty young to get it and, you know, had to be dealt with. And I've had men in the audience come up to me and say, I thought this was going to be some blankety blank, you know, sales training thing. Now I get what you mean, because I tell them the story about how I had to pick a surgeon. And that surgeon had to be in sales mode to me. It wasn't about the surgeon's skills, because they were all highly skilled. It was about how well they sold themselves to me, how well they connected to me. And I've had men come up to me and say, because of that, I'm going to go get checked, or I'm going to go and take, and I'm going to, you know, I've realized I haven't had my own tests. I need to take care of this. And that's a change I've seen, right? If you are willing to show somebody vulnerability and put it in the context of everyday things that we all deal with, like our health, suddenly the walls go down and people are listening to your parlance. People now are listening. It's just such for me personally, as a keynote speaker, that's why I do it. I mean, not to drive men to the doctor. I do it. You know, I do it so that people can walk away going, I feel pretty good about myself right now. And vulnerability has that magical, I don't know, it's like a secret sauce of vulnerability. It's just like that thing that brings down the defenses. We're all defensive. That's another thing COVID has started. We've all become more defensive because we don't know people. So what do we have to react to? What I see on a screen. That's sad. So
your story about choosing a surgeon, it just brought up something for me. I just 2 days ago, I visited a new doctor. My doctor who I've had for years retired last year, and he recommended another doctor in his practice for me to go to. And it was time for, you know, a physical and checkup. And so for the first time on Wednesday, I met my new doctor, and he won me over immediately because he was genuine, I felt. And he came in and, you know, he had his computer under his laptop, you know, under his arm because of the things he needed to look at and note, you know, in, on the computer about me. But he put it aside and sat down and just faced me and said, let's talk about ourselves. And just said, I want to get to know you. Tell me what you'd like me to know. You can ask me questions about what you'd like to know about me. I fell in love with the guy in the sense, yeah. You know, that this yeah. is this guy's great. And I am going yep. to literally write to my former doctor and let him know that the choice that he very thoughtfully chose this doctor for me. And I really appreciated that. And I appreciated this new guy for just the manner. It was just very genuine. It was sincere. And that makes such a difference.
And that doctor was in total sales mode.
Yeah.
Not in the conventional way, but in the way that I want people to understand, right? But if you went back to him and said, Dr. So-and-so, you're a great sales guy, he would say, I'm not in sales. I'm just the, right?
Yeah.
Because of the sales stereotype to your very first question. So the more that we get people to understand that everything we do has a direct impact on people's willingness to engage with us and buy us, the more we can do, the more I can do to make that case, the better off people are going to be in their lives, their careers, their earning potential. Everything will change. And it's, I see it all the time. I see it in my client base all the time.
Here at Someone to Tell To, we now use this assessment tool called the Working Genius, and we've implemented into the first module of our listening training. And I know we've just been geeking out over this thing because it's really changed a lot of our lives and, you know, the way that we operate at work and personally. And on the assessment, I'm what's known as a galvanizer. So I just love to rally people around an idea or a concept, get people excited and passionate. But what would you want to say to people who are not galvanizers? Galvanizers, it's a little bit easy. It comes easier and more natural for us to sell ourselves or sell whatever we care about. But what about all of the folks who maybe are not in that category or who don't share that genius?
Yeah, so this is the same kind of question I get when people say, well, all salespeople are extroverts and I could never do that, right? And I argue that that's absolutely nonsense. First of all, we all have extroverts in and, excuse me, I beg your pardon, we're all both, I think is what I'm stumbling around here trying to say, right? We all have introversion and extroversion within us. And let me say something with regard to galvanizing. I haven't taken that. I'm going to. And I am probably a galvanizer as well. I'm always the person who wants to bring people together. I'm always inviting more people to dinner. Drives my wife crazy, right? Can we just eat the two of us? And I'm like, no, I want to have 92 other people here. I'm exaggerating, of course. But that's always been my style. Not everybody is like that. However, I do believe that the great differentiator that changes people from not being a galvanizer to leaning into the topic at hand is passion. You could be the biggest introvert in the world. You could be the opposite of a galvanizer, but if I put something in front of you, I would bet that's really important to you and maybe is a hobby that you do or something you're passionate about. I would bet money that you would change to adapt to that moment. Because I see it all the time, right? I have a good friend who is, I would say, introverted and the opposite of a galvanizer. It's so funny you're asking this question because I'm thinking of a friend right now. It's probably the opposite of that. But he happens to be a Trekkie, like a Trekkie. I know you weren't born, Tom. Just keep it to yourself. But, you know, a Trekkie. And by the way, that was a little before my time, too. But if you start talking to him about Trekkie, Star Trek, you can't get him to shut up. It's like, dude, like, I don't care that much. But he goes from barely saying two words to anybody to can't get him to stop talking. So the way I see it is, I think when it's important to us and we're passionate about it, we step up and adapt to the moment. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I was at actually a networking event last week, and someone, there was a panel, and one of the the panelist said he uses this simple phrase that he reminds himself of daily is always be marketing. So no matter where you are, just always be looking for opportunities to sell the thing that you care about.
It should be you. And I think even that expression we have to be careful of, because, you know, there's always the expression always be closing and always be selling, right? And I think while those expressions are absolutely true because they're happening in the background as you're building relationships, I think we have to be careful of them because it may fire up that negative stereotype, right? I don't want that pressure to always be selling. I don't want that pressure to always feel like I've got to be on. And that's why people often shy away from networking events, right? And because people, I think, they have a misperception of what networking is. They think networking is, I got to stop doing what I'm doing and go to this event. I hate small talk. I got to stand in a corner. I got to nurse a drink until it's over and hopefully I can get out unscathed. And, you know, I teach networking. And one of the things I say is, everybody networks differently. Networking is not venue dependent. We're networking, the three of us right now, right? Mm-hmm. We're getting to know each other. You know, networking is sitting at a, you know, at a bar when you're having dinner and just talking to the person next to you. There's no agenda other than just connecting and having a nice time. So networking is about building relationships as opposed to where I need to go to do this and stand and be uncomfortable. So, and by default, we're always marketing and selling ourselves. We just don't need to focus on it. We just have to know what's happening if we're showing up as our best selves.
I was thinking of a story from our first book. Do you remember we wrote about that couple? We were meeting with the young man at the restaurant. I don't know if you would want to share that, but I think that's such a good example that of what Todd's describing here about like making a connection around something that the person cares about.
Yes. Met with a young couple who were going to be getting married, and, you know, and to talk with them about the relationship and, you know, how they were perceiving it and how they were doing and what, and ask them what they love to do. And the young man in this relationship was a big guy, and he looked kind of tough, and he surprised us with the answer. He said, "I like music," and not that was as surprising. When they asked, "What kind of music do you like?" and he said, "Sinatra, show tunes." You know, it's like, whoa! This was the last. Again, the perception, the look, the last thing we expected this guy to say. And he went on and on about it, just passionately about the kind of music he liked. And with every new musician he mentioned or genre of music, it's like, whoa, who is this? Because you just would never have guessed. And then he thanked us for asking, because he said, no one ever asks.
Knew where you're going with that. Yep. No one ever, because they make a decision based on what they see.
Yeah.
Remember we talked about biases?
Yes.
And so they don't even give this guy a chance to sell himself.
Yeah. And thankfully we did. I mean, you know, that's part of the way what we try to teach people about how to listen better, how to re-interact better with people and connect. And is that you can't have those judgments, those biases, those perceptions go ahead.
And if I remember correctly, in the restaurant, wasn't the music playing in the background?
Yes, why. Yes, thank you. Because that's exactly how it happened as well. The Muzak that was on or whatever in the restaurant that I don't think we even were were hearing, because we were trying to listen to him.
Yeah.
But he heard it. And he started very silently starting to sing along to it. And it was like a show tune or something. It wasn't, again, the punk rock that we assumed that he would be connecting with and loving. And that's, you know, so I think we asked, yeah, so you must like that song. And he said, yeah, I love But no one ever.
The reason I want to bring that up is because, Todd, one of our values as an organization that we stand by is noticing, like noticing people, noticing things about them that other people just would overlook or miss. And the fact is we were able to notice that this man was humming along. That was a bit jarring for both of us, and hence just asking a couple follow-up questions.
What made him, we saw what made him come alive.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, I think you probably didn't even really want to be in this conversation with us, you know, to talk about relationships and things like that. You know, we could tell that it was his fiance who was pushing this agenda here, and less him. But then he came alive, and it just changed the whole conversation.
It's interesting. This is such so last week I was in Indianapolis doing a keynote. There were a couple hundred people in the room, and there was a guy in the corner. Had neck tattoos, and so my bias is I see neck tattoos, I just get very nervous. For whatever reason, it just invokes whatever it does in me. And so he kind of looked the part, you know, yeah. Bigger gentleman, big long beard. I just kind of, you know, it all fit in my mind. He had tattoos up and down his arms, but the only thing I noticed was the neck tattoos. So I was a little apprehensive, and lo and behold, at the end of the session, he was first in line to come up and shake my hand and say, this was life-changing for me. And he actually gave me a written testimonial. He said, thank you, this was life-changing. And I looked at him and I said, thank you, because I was a little nervous looking at you the whole time. And he started laughing. And he said, I get that a lot. And so in that moment, here's a guy, I'm probably 25, 30 years older than him. Well, maybe not that much, but.
You don't look it, Todd. Mm-hmm. You don't look it.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm 94. And we've since communicated. And what I've learned as a keynote speaker traveling all over, and I do gigs all over the world. When I go into a part of this country where I have an audience comprised of people that I feel may be very different set of values and beliefs than I have, I'm always proven that we're closer than we realize.
Yeah.
And so you asked earlier about what has COVID done to us? It's created a lot of anger because we had way too much social media and all of that noise to rely on. And I think we've abdicated the opportunity to assume positive intent about people. And I'm going to let that sit.
I think that is a fantastic, phenomenal insight.
I just stunned you both into silence.
Yeah. I don't even know how to, other than that is brilliant. I really think that has happened.
It has happened because I see it. I had somebody walk up to me, and I don't want to get into politics or anything. Let's just say I had somebody walk up to me, you know, who was very clear. We're in very different belief segments, and I'll just doesn't. And he said, I really, really, really like what you talked about. And we just got into it. And I just realized that, you know, it was nice to connect with somebody like I used to connect with people in a way that was like people used to get along, right? I mean, you fight by day, but at friends, you're still night. At night, you're still friends, you know, and I miss that. I think I really, really miss that about our society. And that's part of sales as well, right? Look, sales is mindset and behavior. We have to assume positive intent. We have to show up for people. We have to be present. We have to take the high road. So you asked earlier, what's the anecdote? Taking the high road, being brave, give people a chance. People will either step up or disappoint you. That's what I've learned, right? I mean, you know, they're either going to play into your stereotype or they're going to prove you wrong. I'm happy to be proven wrong 100% of the time. Every time I'm wrong about somebody, I literally feel terrific.
I think that's a great place to end.
Yeah, we have the same thought. This is pretty profound. Thank you.
It is what it is, guys. And, you know, we either have to give people a chance to show us they're not what we believe them to be and let them sell themselves to us or not. And if the answer is not, then you're going to have a pretty brutal existence on this planet. That's my two cents.
And be missing out.
I think you are. Just like this gentleman who walked up to me at this keynote, and when I first laid eyes on him, he literally scared the hell out of me. I was like, uh-oh, this guy's going to hate what I have to say. And he turned out to be just a peach of a guy. Just the sweetest, nicest, most gentle guy. I even said to him, I said, you know, your neck tattoos scare me. He goes, yeah, I get that all the time. He goes, my wife hates them too.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Very informative too. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Todd is coming to do a presentation with someone to tell it to, and with some invited guests, you know, from our connections and our networks. And we're really excited about that. That'll be in about another month, and we're looking forward to hearing so much more. And for you to be able to share your message with even more people, and we know it's going to be great. And
thank you. I'm grateful to Sarah Kennedy. You know, I haven't seen, you know, Sarah's on your board, and she connected us. And
yeah,
I worked with Sarah 14 years ago, and she still remembers everyone's in sales. And I was so pleased when she connected us. And I'm always happy to lend my voice to places that are trying to do good in the world. And I think you all are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are too.
Thank you too. Well, it has been a delight and a privilege.
Thank you. So likewise.
We're glad you were here today with us. We are so looking forward to having some time in person with Todd. I mean, we've had these several conversations with him, but we've never been in person with him. So we're excited to do that in about a month. And we know that for us and for everyone who attends the seminar that he's going to be leading, that it's going to be a defining moment in the way we look at what we do and how we talk about what we do, how we hopefully are able to inspire people by our demeanor, by the words we say, and have them understand even better what it is that we, that someone to tell it to do, and why listening, we believe listening, is so important and life-changing for the world.
One of the things that is probably the biggest takeaway for me from this conversation is just being reminded how easy it is to write people off and actually not to give people the space and the time and the attention that they deserve as human beings. Because to Todd's point, towards the end of the conversation, we need to give people the opportunity to sell themselves.
Right.
And so I loved recounting the story that we wrote about in our first book, Someone to Tell to, Sharing Life's Journey, about the young man sitting in the diner with us.
That's right.
It just was a good reminder to just truly take the opportunity to notice people and give them a chance to give their own sales pitch about who they are as individuals and who they are as people. So thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having Todd with us, as Michael mentioned, in just a few weeks. We always are looking for opportunities to grow our organization. So if you could think of a couple connections in your networks that maybe would value from our listening training, we just encourage you to make a connection for us. And you can reach out to us at info@someonetotellitto.org. So thanks again. Until we listen again.